I'm Anthony Bachman from All Things Good and Nerdy, a geeky podcast part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other fantastic geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome to another episode of Play Comics, where once again, we're talking to a creator about their cool stuff, because I like talking to people about their cool stuff, especially when it's people I've actually met in real life. That just makes it even cooler. Spoiler alert, that is like our guest today, Sophie Goldstein. Sophie, how are you today?
I'm doing good, thank you. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me on.
Well, I'm happy to get to talk to you, like however many long months it was since we saw you at a comic convention in Sumter back when those still happened.
Yeah, it's been a while. Was that last year?
It was because we didn't go this year with all the craziness, and Kaylee was kind of sad.
Yeah, that was our second time going there, and it's always a really lovely experience. It's a cute little regional show. I like those because I feel like a lot of shows have just like, SBX has gotten huge, and MICE, and some of these shows that just keep growing in size. So the smaller ones where you kind of have more time to talk to people and just relax can be really lovely.
And also ones where visitors can steal the couch that you guys are sitting on.
Oh, yeah, no, I forgot about that. Yeah, you and Carl really hit it off. It was great.
We did. That's why I had him on so much. For anybody who hasn't picked up on this, Sophie is married to Carl, who was on before to talk about his book, Beer's Kiss, which is still amazing, and you should still go spend your money on it. But today, I'm hoping to maybe divert some of your money over to the Sophie side of the artistic endeavors. Specifically, we're looking about her book, An Embarrassment of Witches, which I have had a very fun time following along with on Patreon as it was going.
Yeah, it just, the book just came out March of 2020, which is possibly the worst timing for a book release that you can have in a year when it's a terrible year to release a book. But I'm still very proud of it. And happy to talk about it.
It's a thing that you've done, and that you have done very well.
Well, thank you.
And you really should be proud of it. So I feel like I have to start at the beginning here. Where did you get the idea to make An Embarrassment of Witches? And what is your elevator pitch to get people to read it?
Well, I guess I'll start with the elevator pitch. It's about these two girls, Rory and Angela, and they're best friends. They've been friends since childhood, and now they are graduating college, and they're at that stage in their life where, they've been a lot. When you're younger, you're kind of like aiming towards college, like that's your whole life goal, and you gotta get the grades to get in a good college, and then you gotta do well in classes, and then you graduate and you're like, oh, now what do I do with the rest of my life? So that's kind of where they're at. But additionally, they live in a world where there's magic. So for example, Rory had she majored, I think, in spellcasting. I wish I don't even remember offhand, but Angela is actually, she's a cryptobiologist. So her area of focus in her studies was the use of magical plants for medicinal purposes. And they have animal familiars. Angela has a little porcupine, and Rory has an owl. And so it's just kind of about them trying to get on with their lives, and also how their friendship grows and changes as they grow into the adults they will become. So that's kind of the elevator pitch for the book. It's set in Pittsburgh, where I was living most of the time that I was working on the book. And it's also co-written with my friend Jen Jordan, who I did a webcomic with, which was my first big comics endeavor. We started that in 2009, this webcomic, Darwin Carmichael is Going to Hell. And this is our second project together. And I wish I could remember exactly how we came up with the idea, but I think we basically started from the premise of, like, we'd like to make another book together. and then as we were bouncing around, we both were kind of feeling that we both had a difficult transition from college into adult life. And so we felt like that was kind of rich territory to do stories about. And Darwin Carmichael is Going to Hell was also a world where there was, like, a lot of just magic as part of normal everyday life. And so we continued that on into An Embarrassment of Witches, because it's just fun. Magic just makes things more fun.
I mean, it really does, though. And one of the things that I really loved while reading this was the fact that you guys didn't spend time going in there trying to explain the magic and what was going on and everything. It's just there. That's how it is in the world. And it took me a few pages to see that that's what was happening with it, because it's just so naturally there.
Yeah, I think there's a couple different ways of having fantasy books, and you see a lot, especially in YA literature, which this book is, like, it's a little bit older than, like, a strict YA, but, you know, it's in that territory. But, you know, with something like Harry Potter, where you have someone discovering, like, a secret magical world, and that you see that all the time. And then the opposite end of that is, like, Lord of the Rings, where you have, like, very complex magical systems with, like, long histories that have their own book called The Silmarillion. and so our book is, like, neither of those. It's kind of just sits in the middle of that territory, I actually think of it more as being like a show like BoJack Horseman, where, you know, like, you have animals as a part of everyday life, and they never explain why animals are part of everyday life. They just are. And then that a lot of the humor comes from that aspect of the world. And that's very much the way we treat magic here. Like, it's not like a complex system where it has all these rules and, like, you know, there's giant magic fights and things. It's an aspect of the world. And it's also, it's a helpful metaphor for, like, to explore, like, you know, the real systems of the world or feelings or that sort of stuff.
So how did you and Jen get started on doing anything together?
We met in college. Jen, her now husband, lived on the same floor that I did in freshman year. And so I was friends with Steve, her husband, before I really got to know Jen. And then it wasn't until after we both graduated that we were just, I was working as a secretary, I'm sorry, an administrative assistant at NYU. And we were meeting for lunch one day, I remember, and we were just talking, like, having a joking conversation about, like, what would be the karmic penalties for eating babies if the whole world of Darwin Carmichael is Going to Hell kind of spun out from that conversation. And I don't know, just, like, it was just kind of a lark to do a webcomic at that time, and I never really knew that it would become, like, my whole life as it has.
Well, I'm really glad you guys were talking about eating babies.
You know, it's an important topic. Gotta discuss.
I'm hoping that you decided not to do that.
It wasn't really a question of like whether or not to eat the babies. It was just whether or not you would be punished on a karmic level for said act of eating babies. But I would like to state for the record that as of this date, I have not consumed any babies. I promise.
Oh, no, I totally believe you. I just never thought that that was a sentence I would hear you say.
I just like to reassure your listeners that they are not listening to the ravings of a cannibal.
Let's move on to some happier things here.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times when I'm talking to people about these books, they get rather autobiographical with them. So how much of that sort of thing came into this book for you two? I mean, I know you guys said you had trouble transitioning out of college, so there's got to be something in there.
Yeah, I think there's actually a lot of aspects of the book that are autobiographical. I think that in terms of the personality of the characters, there's a correspondence between like Rory and myself and Angela and Jen, and the particular, like, especially in terms of the characters' weaknesses, kind of correspond to our own personal weaknesses. And so, like, with Rory's kind of, she's a little bit careless of other people's feelings and inconsiderate. And that's definitely something I've struggled with. And Angela has a tendency to let people walk all over her, which is something that Jen has struggled with in the past. So I think that that played into those characters. And then additionally, I think that Jen is, in addition to being a writer, she's also an academic. So she's doing her PhD in medieval literature. I hesitate to say that just because of like the term. It might be like Middle Ages or something. Like there's the terminology around that changes. But so that's where her focus of study is. And so there's a lot of stuff about grad school, because there's not Angela or Rory, but there's another character that becomes Rory's love interest who's a grad student. And Jen drew a lot on her own experience of being in grad school to inform his character. So there's a lot of like kind of insider academia jokes that come from that. So I think that there is definitely a lot of us in this book. And like, you know, even though it's set in a magical world, I would hope that the emotional journeys of the characters would be relatable, because they are rooted in real emotions and real things that we experience.
I mean, spoiler alert, I think you pulled that one off.
Phew. Well, that's a relief.
I just wanted to make sure you heard somebody say that today.
I appreciate it very much. It's I will take all the compliments I can get, because it was hard. It's been hard having a book that we worked on for so long, and then to have it come out at such a at a moment when people quite rightfully were not really focused on comics. So I haven't had as many opportunities as I normally would to talk about this book with people. So another reason why I'm so grateful that you reached out.
And I mean, another reason I'm really excited to have you on is that most of the people that I've had on for these have done either writing or the art, mostly the writing, just because that's who I've been able to catch. And I know just from looking at some of your other stuff, you have done the art and the writing before. So how did you guys split up the work on this one?
I think we have a little bit of a different system than you see with a lot of writer artist teams, because Jen and I actually co-write the book. So the way that generally works is we get together. We normally will do things through like GChat sessions or through like messaging rather than through voice, just because I think it kind of, we're both millennials, so we like grew up using chat stuff, and it also kind of gives us a little bit more room to think about things and not have to, like, when you're having a conversation with someone, I think, like, there's a tendency to want to fill the silence and stuff like that. But with text, you can kind of, like, you know, we bounce ideas back and forth, and then we can go pretty seamlessly from that to, like, writing and then come back to chatting and things like that. So that's how, over time, that's what our system has come to be. So we will set up these, like, writing dates online, and we'll meet, and we'll talk through the story. And during the course of a normal writing session, which would be, like, maybe, you know, a couple hours once a week, which is one of the, you know, like, we're fitting this, Jen's fitting the writing in around her academic work. I was working on other stuff at the time. So the process of writing the book took a long time just because we could only meet so often. So we would meet, we would talk through, like, where we were in the story and what we wanted to have happen. And then we would kind of feel it out. So I'd be like, well, I'm really feeling writing this particular scene. And Jen would be like, all right, I want to write this scene. So then we'll go to our G docs that we're working in, and we'll, like, write out a script for however many pages. And normally, we'll be like, you know, like six panels a page or so. And then when I'm actually thumbnailing it, I might break it down differently, but that just so the pacing stays manageable. And then, so we'll write for a bit. And then usually what'll happen is either, you know, we'll finish a scene or one of us will get stuck and we'll be like, I don't know what to do now. Could you come look at it? And we'll, like, switch and look at what each other has written and give feedback or suggest alterations to lines, or like, oh, I think it would be really funny if this happened. So it's a pretty, like, fluid kind of way of writing, which I think works well because we're friends and we know each other very well. We have a lot of respect for each other as writers. And also I think that, that there's a certain, like, with writing with another person, as opposed to, like, one person writing everything, one person writing everything, there's a lot of, like, compromise. So if I have a line that I think is really, really funny and Jen's like, I don't know about this line. And I'm like, no, I need to have this line. She'll probably say that's fine, and vice versa. So it's kind of about finding the common ground. And there's definitely been times when I remember particularly, this is actually on Darwin, but when she wrote this line and she started, I was, like, watching her write in the Google Doc and she started erasing it because it was, like, it was very profane. And I was like, no, 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 that's so good. So we also could push each other to go a little further sometimes. So that's kind of how our writing process goes.
Every time I talk to somebody about their writing process, it makes me want to actually go write something, and then I remember that all my ideas are super derivative.
Isn't everybody's?
Yeah, but most of the time I can go find the exact issue that my story in my head ends up being.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from, but I do kind of subscribe to the, like, there's nothing new under the sun idea, and that a lot of stories are kind of rehashes of other stories or new takes on them. So I don't think that if you really felt like writing, I don't think that should stop you.
Well, good, because I know somebody that I would want to do the art if I ever get around to writing something.
Well, if you have someone who will do the art, that's, like, I mean, I just say this as someone who both writes and draws, but I think that's the hard part. So it's good that you can find someone else to do it.
So as y'all were writing this, were you planning on having it be this book and that's it? Or maybe thinking about sequels, or just kind of leaving it open in case the idea spurs along, or what?
I don't think we had distinct plans for their... No, we weren't, like, thinking that this was the first book in a series. We definitely have ideas for things that could happen after this story, and we have talked about them. But I don't know. I don't know when that would happen or if that would happen. I mean, a lot of it will probably depend on how successful this book is in the long run. You know, if it does well, then it would make sense to revisit the characters. But I don't really, as a writer, tend to go back to previous stories. And I often have people like, will ask me like, well, is there going to be more of this particular story? And I don't know if that speaks to my inability as a writer to end things on a distinctively ending like note, but I just generally, I just move on to the next project. That being said, it is a pretty, I think there is a lot that could happen in the world of An Embarrassment of Witches, and it's a pretty open-ended world. So there are a lot of stories that could be told there. I just don't know if we will go back to it.
I mean, I definitely wouldn't say that this one ends on, oh no, there has to be something else. Because, I mean, it has an end point. You can tell it's done, but not necessarily finished.
I mean, nobody's dead. So,
spoilers, yeah. Come on.
It's not that kind of book, man.
I know, that's why I felt safe saying that.
Yeah. I definitely, like the characters, I think, I don't think this is a spoiler. At the end of the book, you see the characters kind of moving into the next stages of their life. And so it's an ending and it's also a beginning, which I think is true in a lot of parts of life. Like, you know, that's what happens when you graduate college. It's an ending and it's also a beginning to the next part of your life. So I definitely, there's things that could happen in those future parts of their lives. And Jen and I have talked about it. But you know, there's also like the practical realities of like, Jen is finishing her doctorate, and I am, I don't know, doing whatever the heck it is I'm doing.
I mean, I don't know if anybody knows what they're doing right now, so you're at least in good company.
Yeah, I can't. It's such a weird time. I can't think of another period in my life when I've been as unfocused as things feel right now. I mean, there are things, I am doing stuff and I am working on things, but it's not the same kind of like, I am not working on a graphic novel project right now, which is under normal circumstances would be what I would be doing right now. I'm just kind of doing more like artistic exploration. Because yeah, it's really hard to think. I'm having a lot of trouble thinking in the long term at this present moment. And a graphic novel is it's often a multi-year commitment.
How long were y'all working on this one?
In total, we were working on this book for 5 friggin' years. I will say that, so I was drawing it for about 2 years. So the scripting from beginning to end took us 3 years because of what I was saying about, you know, like there were times when we would be meeting consistently once a week for a few hours. And then there were times when we wouldn't meet for months because other stuff just had to take priority. So it was 5 years in total. I think that if we were, you know, if we were in a situation where we could have just focused on making the book, it would have happened a lot faster. But I mean, that's just the reality of, I mean, not only because Jen has other commitments outside of comics, but that was my reality, is that I also had to take on like paying freelance work because I wasn't getting a huge advance.
The day jobs just get in the way, don't they?
Yeah. I've never been very good at the whole day job part of it. So I've done freelance, I guess the past few years, I've done freelance comics here and there. And those have been pretty good. And I have my books and I also have done some teaching stuff. And right now I'm in the Tulsa Artist Fellowship. which is, as you might guess, based in Tulsa. And it's a fellowship that provides both free housing and a stipend. So I'm in a very lucky position right now for an artist of having a steady income and a place to live, which I cannot tell you how great that is in 2020. It's been a real godsend.
So I feel like I've let you tease this enough. You keep saying books. And obviously, I know what you're talking about, but how about you tell the readers about some of the other things that you've created?
Sure. So aside from Embarrassment of Witches and Darwin Carmichael is Going to Hell, which are the two books I've done with Jen that I've already talked about, in 2015, Ad House Books published The Oven, which is a short science fiction graphic novel about a young couple that move from their kind of environmentally controlled futuristic bubble city to this little planet that's in the middle of nowhere, and it has two suns and it's super heated, but they join this kind of back to the land movement of people who are building their own homes and growing their own food and like really trying to live in a more natural way. But it's not really what they imagined it would be like. Instead of it being this kind of utopian paradise of like crunchy granola types, there's a lot of, you know, drugs and people having sex with each other and just like, you know, stuff that happens in lawless communities. And so it's kind of about what happens to the relationship between this couple in this new environment. Then my book after that is called House of Women. It was published in 2017 by Fantagraphics Books. And it's a horror science fiction story about these four women who are emissaries from a kind of like intergalactic overseer culture. And they go to this remote planet with the idea that they're going to start a school and they're going to indoctrinate the natives of that planet in their culture and teach them to be good little galactic citizens. And then things don't really go very well for them from there. And that book is rendered in a black and white Art Nouveau style. So that's a big aspect of that book. I was looking at a lot of art by Aubrey Beardsley and Klimt, and also a lot of Japanese printmaking.
And I think you pulled both of those off really well. I know that they are in my house somewhere. I'm just not sure where, because Kaylee read them last and I don't know where she put them.
Well, yeah, I think they're different from each other. Of course, I think artists tend to see bigger distinctions among their work than other people do, but so they're both really fun in their different ways. I think The Oven is a much more visually restrained book, and like physically it's just a smaller book, and then with House of Women I was really trying to go further and push my art more, and also it's a horror story, so I think that there's a certain amount of like extremism that you can do with horror that wouldn't be appropriate to like a more restrained story like The Oven. So I had a lot of fun drawing House of Women. That was a good project.
I mean, I could definitely say this, and you can tell they're both you, but I don't see how anybody could go in there and think, oh, these are like the same thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I had this experience when I was doing a webcomic, and I had the typical webcomic thing where, you know, when I started drawing my webcomic, I was just starting to make comics. And then, so I started in 2009 and it wrapped up in 2013. That's a 4-year span. And I felt like my art at the end of it, like, was so different than my art at the beginning of it. And yet, I would have people who, like, honestly could not tell the difference, and it always blew my mind. I don't know if they were just particularly unobservant or if I was just delusional about the amount of, like, progress I've made. I think there's also, like, I think cartoonists sometimes underestimate the amount of people who don't actually really pay close attention to the art and are really just, like, they read it for the story and they don't really, like, spend a lot of time for the art, with the art. So there's those kinds of readers as well. But yeah, I definitely got that feedback sometimes where I'd be like, oh no, I'm very embarrassed by the art at the beginning of this. It's so different from the end. And they'd be like, I don't know, it all looks the same to me.
Some people are just weird. What can you do?
Truly.
Obviously, we're going to have a link down in the show notes where people can go buy An Embarrassment of Witches, which I think they should all do. It's 200 pages of just fun comics.
It's a feel-good comic. And doesn't everybody want to feel good right now? Don't we just want to feel good?
Do it. It makes me want to go hug my cat.
Aw, that's the best recommendation.
I mean, I'm an internet person, so obviously my cat is the best thing ever. And anything that makes me want to hug my cat is just wonderful.
Have you ever read The Golden Compass?
I saw the first movie and I didn't realize how weirdly it was kind of anti-religion before I gave it to my very Catholic mother for Christmas one year.
Oh no, yeah, it's very, very anti-Catholic. I bring it up because when I first read, I actually just reread the whole series, but when I first read The Golden Compass, in that book, they have daemons, which are, they're like familiars, but more so because they're actually like the representation of someone's soul. But each person in that world has like an animal creature that like talks to them and keeps them company, and they're like very deeply bonded with. And I remember reading that and just like as like a 12-year-old and just being like, oh, I wanted daemon so badly. Like it was like a visceral need to have it. And now I have cats and I feel like that in many ways does satisfy that need. But that book, when you said that, it just brought that to mind.
So who is in charge in your house, you or the cats?
Oh, the cats, no doubt.
That's what I figured. I just wanted to be sure.
Yeah, we are basically their human servants who just administer to their every whim and need. They have us extremely well trained. Like we have like our entire morning ritual revolves around the cats. Like when Carl usually wakes up first and he'll go out and he'll feed the cats, and then we have two cats. So we have Zora and Pris, who are named after replicants from Blade Runner, if anyone's curious about that. So he'll let Pris into the bedroom and she likes to come in and get like a special petting time just by herself with me. And so that's how I wake up, is like I'll give her morning petting time until such point and she decides that she wants to eat some more. So then she'll go out and eat some more, and then it's second petting time. And like so there's like a solid 20 minutes of her morning that is just like attending to the needs of our cats.
I wish I could do that, but mine wanted at 3 a.m.
Oh.
Obviously, yeah, that does not work.
No, we don't let our cats sleep with us because I think it would be too disruptive. So they get closed into Carl's office at night because otherwise I think our entire night would be them scratching at the door.
Yeah, we give up that fight a long time ago.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's going to, how long it's going to last, because at least once a week, Carl's like, because then we let them in like before we go to sleep, and Zora will like curl up at the foot of the bed, and when it comes time to like actually put them away so we can go to sleep, he's always like, so it's like, but she looks so cute there. She's so relaxed, and I have to be the one who's like, nope. Cats are not sleeping in the bedroom, Carl. I guess I'm the tough love one in the household.
So here is everybody's Twitter mission. Go on to Twitter, find the Red Ink Radio account. Spoiler alert, that is Sophie. And tag her in pictures of your cat on the bed.
Oh my god, that would make me so happy. Please, please send me pictures of your cats.
Where did the Red Ink Radio name come from?
I wish I had a more interesting origin story, but it was basically SophieGoldstein.com was not available, and I had to figure out a name to use for my branding. And I am a redhead, and I draw comics, which involve ink, and I like the radio. I don't know. So I just got like Red Ink Radio. That sounds good. And now I'm just stuck with it. And it's like, it's my Twitter handle, it's my Instagram handle, it's my website, and it'll be with me probably until I die.
And it's not a bad name.
No, it's fine. It's just kind of, it's kind of from, it was a little bit before that time, because now I think people generally had their handles or whatever are their names, are their like professional names. But before that, you know, people were coming up with all sorts of weird screen names and things like that and jokes and stuff. And so Red Ink Radio is kind of more from that time frame than like if you have a Zoomer who's making art now, they probably would put up the money to actually buy their full name website. Unlike me, who has like $200, you gotta be effing kidding me.
I mean, $200 is money you can spend on other comics or snacks.
Yeah. It did not, now it seems like a good investment, but at the time that I was like an MFA student who had never published anything ever, it did not really seem like a solid way to spend money.
Well, this has been Cat Talk and Social Media Advice with Chris and Sophie.
Yes, my advice, get a cat, buy the website name, your actual name as a website. Those are my two pieces of solid advice, and I stand by both of them.
I fully agree. If you'd like to have more wonderful cat talk or social media advice, or just see cool artistic things, Sophie, where else can people find you on the internet if they weren't paying attention for the last 5 minutes?
All right. Well, let me go through the whole list. So my website is redinkradio.com, and I don't post on it very regularly, but it is good to go to because I have a bunch of my like shorter comics that are up there that you can read for free. So if you want to see some of my work, that's a really good place to do that. I'm also on Twitter at redinkradio. Where I mostly retweet, at this point in time, mostly retweet angry political stuff, and then occasionally photos of my cats. And then also I promote my books on there. It's a little bit of a mess. I'm also on Instagram. I don't post there a lot. Also at Red Ink Radio. And then finally, and possibly most importantly, I'm also on Patreon. And that's, I do a lot of posting on there, a lot of stuff that's behind a paywall, so only people who are paying at least $3 a month can see. So if you just look at me up, Sophie Goldstein, on Patreon, you can follow me there. And I will say, even if you're not considering following me, if there are artists that you really love and you find them on Patreon, it's really great to support them because it gives people a regular, reliable source of income. And it may not, like $3 a month may not sound like a lot to you. I hope it doesn't, but it can, but that adds up over a bunch of people. So it's a really great way to support people, especially in this time when it's like really hard for artists to make a living because the conventions are not happening. So consider going on there.
And obviously we'll have links to all that stuff down in the show notes because clicking links is so much easier than spelling things. Although let's be real, you have the easiest to spell thing of anybody that I've talked to lately.
Yes, thank you. I pride myself on that. Carl, my husband, Carl, who we've mentioned a couple times now, his last name is Antonowitz, and he, it's always a mess getting people to spell that one. So, and then my last name's Goldstein. That's not even that hard, but I don't even make people do that. Red, ink, radio. There you go.
When radio is the hardest word to spell, I think you're going to be okay.
Yeah, yeah. I think it'll be fine. Fortunately, also, if people just, like, if you Google my name, I'm the first result or among the first results on there. So until some other Sophie Goldstein achieves greater notoriety, I'm also pretty easy to find.
If that happens, I'll lead the army to take them down.
Yeah, so far, it used to be that the top result for Sophie Goldstein was someone's dog who is named Sophie Goldstein. So I am happy to tell you that I am now more famous than that dog. But since then, there's also, I think there's an actress named Sophie Goldstein, a couple, I think there's like a young soccer player, who like a youth soccer player whose articles sometimes come up. So I'm keeping my eye on them. I'm watching their rise. And if they get too close, it's going to be trouble.
Well, I just checked and you are everything on page one.
All right, I'll take that.
I'd say you're doing pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it's much better than being like John Smith. Then you're just screwed.
On that note, I think we're going to have to cut things off because I feel like we could probably end up recording like a 5-hour episode, and I just don't have the spoons to do that right now.
Yeah, well, it's been really nice talking to you. Thank you so much for having me on.
It's been nice talking to you again, too. I'm very happy we were able to pull this off. Obviously, you and Carl, but mostly you right now, because you're the one I'm talking to. You can always come back for these anytime you want, whether it be a regular episode or because you have another cool thing to come talk about.
Fingers crossed someday we will. I know Carl's working on something really great right now, so hopefully when he's ready, he'll bring that to you.
Well, I mean, knowing both of you, not like super best friends or anything, but having actually talked to both of you with this stuff, I guarantee you that you will both have multiple things that you could possibly bring over here. And probably things that are going to be too cool to bring over here because you'll have too much time getting taken up by bigger names than me.
Thank you for that.
No pressure.
All right. Well, yeah, just watch out, world. We're coming for you.
Obviously, you guys can follow social media for me, too. Play Comics Cast on Twitter, playcomics.com. There's links to everything. But just be a good art patron person and go on Patreon. And I did not realize that those two words were going to be that close together, so it's weird. But go do it. Sophie is worth following. Carl is worth following. Obviously, today I'm going to say go follow Sophie more heavily because that's who I'm talking to right now. They're both great. You're,
I mean,
both
I'll
great.
Be honest with you. I'll be honest with you. The money's all going to the same place. So if you want to follow Carl, that's okay.
But don't, because I think it'd be funny if everybody followed Sophie.
I love it when our marriage becomes a contest. I would like to state for the record that as of this date, I have not consumed any babies.